The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
All right, hope you're looking forward to a good weekend. I certainly hope to be myself. And tomorrow, 9 a.m., by the way, on Facebook, on the Love Life page, Love Life Live. Believers across the country at about 22 to 25 different abortion clinics out there for a prayer ministry, prayer gatherings on Saturday mornings. I'll be hosting that tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., so Eastern time. So make sure you're a part of that. You can be a part of that movement, a part of those quote-unquote peaceful protests, prayerful protests outside these abortion clinics right there on Facebook. So just go to the Love Life Facebook page, and that starts promptly at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And you'll see me on there. So always look forward to getting an opportunity to do that every once in a while. And when I'm not there doing that, which is not very common, four or five times probably in a year, I'm here in Raleigh. But today on the show, I want to get to, in the second half of the show, I want to get to several things on the national level, and my snarky Friday persona will definitely come out as I take you through some of these things. But for the first half of the show, we'll stick to our own backyard. We'll take care of some North Carolina business because recently we had the crossover, which is the date when things that get passed in the House go over to the Senate and vice versa. And so if something doesn't make it, doesn't get passed by the crossover date, well, it's dead until the next session, but there's a lot of good things going on there. And one of our good friends, Representative Matthew Winslow, North Carolina House District 7, is going to help us understand and see some bright spots. How you doing, Matthew?
Steve, doing great.
It's good to hear from you as always, and I know it's a bit of a race to the finish line with the crossover date, so I've got several different things, and you were right on one thing that I put on the list. It wasn't House Bill 190. It was House Bill 180 that goes along with the opioid thing. So we're going to talk through those. But first, I know you wanted to talk about unemployment. We heard the numbers recently, the national numbers, when they were hoping there were going to be a million new people on the job roll, but there were only about 200,000. They fell way short. And the big problem is this whole unemployment mess that we've gotten ourselves into. Because we're making it more profitable for people to stay home than go to work.
Yeah, Steve, that's a big issue. I mean, if anyone goes out and about, you know, people are starting to come out of their houses now. They feel more comfortable with COVID, and they're starting to shop, and they're starting to do things. You know, industry-wide in every industry right now, you're seeing shortages and backlogs, and it's because we're not getting people back to work. And because if you're going to pay them to stay at home and not go to work, what are you going to choose to do? I'm going to stay at home. And then the other part of this is that there is no work search requirement. They took that away because of COVID and reduced it. So now there's no work search requirement. So you can go out there and click check and just say, yeah, I searched for a job, and that's all you've got to do. Used to, you had to prove that you searched for three jobs. And so we took all that away. We took away all the incentive to work. So now you see across the board, that's why you're seeing all these backlogs and shortages, because we have a whole section of the workforce that's staying at home.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. So obviously, I think most of us see the problem there, and there is a time perhaps to extend some grace and some mercy to people that were negatively affected by COVID and what we did to ourselves with the economy. But at this point, obviously, people need to get back to work. So is there anything we can do legislatively at the state level, Matthew, to kind of help turn that around?
Yeah, so there is. We're going to work on putting the work requirement back, the work search requirement back in the law. The governor changed that, you know, with COVID. And honestly, Steve, I don't have a problem with it because it was a different. We moved the goal on people.
Yeah.
You know, no one really knew what was going on. I'm okay with that. You know, you said it right. I love how you phrase it. You know, we hold people accountable. You said at the beginning of your show, hold people accountable, but show grace when it's needed. And we did that. And so now the country is reopening, and it's time to get right back to work. So we need to remove that and go back to the way it was before. And so there is some legislation that the leadership's working on to send the governor. But, you know, the governor could clear it up today and change the work search requirement and discontinue his mandate.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, well, hopefully that will get turned around. And the governor, you know, and the governor doesn't at this point, because he's not running again, doesn't have any reason other than just to kind of keep propelling that Democrat narrative forward. But for us as believers, Matthew, and I know you know this as a business owner and people that you work with all the time, with your home building business, from a Christian perspective, God made every single individual, if they're capable of it mentally and physically, he made us to work. We're made to be productive. And when we incentivize a system that keeps people from working, we're actually violating the image of God. And you end up with people that might feel good in the short term, but it's really harmful. We see that across the board in the welfare state in America. And it's just from a Christian perspective, Matthew, we have to understand that it's actually good and loving and God honoring to make it incentivized for people to get back to work. It's not good for them or society for people to just to sit around and collect a check.
Oh, I 100% agree. But that section, when you're talking about in Genesis, when God is making, you know, each day he's making different sections, you know, when he's created the earth, when he's created the Garden of Eden, and he creates, you know, us as human beings.
Yeah.
And after each section, he says, and it was good, and it was good, and it was good. That is who we are. Whenever you work and you look back and you see that project, you know, it's not pride. What that is what God has instilled in us to do is to work. And so we look back and we go, and it was good, you know, because he created it and he created us in his image.
Yeah, it's so important to remember that. And so make sure you please let me know what's going on there legislatively, why the governor won't just turn this around. It's just a Democrat talking point. But please let us know what's going on there at the legislative level, and hopefully you guys can force his hands. Okay, there's a number of bills that have been passed that I wanted to go through between now and the end of the second segment. And so there's a lot of good things happening out there. Most of the time people aren't aware. There's only a few things that really get any spotlight. But there's actually a lot happening down there. And, of course, there was a big protest and a movement not that long ago dealing with the vaccine mandate. So that was HB 572, which was kind of a replacement for that. So that one got passed. What does that do exactly?
So what it does is it just makes sure that as we have operated prior to COVID, we can continue to operate that way, you know, and so that we can't have, and what it does is it says that, you know, we can't have an executive order that mandates a vaccine. And so, and that's what the focus was on it. And so, you know, we all lived our lives the way, you know, in harmony, and, you know, we understood what the rules were, and we all followed the rules. But now all of a sudden we're getting threats of a, you know, passport mandate, our vaccine passport, and you can't go grocery shopping with it. You can't do different things. You can't travel. Well, what this does, it says, there's no vaccine passport, and we're going to continue to operate with it prior to COVID.
We're going to pick it up there with Matthew Winslow when we come back right after this. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Good to be with you today, handling a little North Carolina business, and then we'll look at some national issues in the second half of the show. Our good friend Matthew Winslow also happens to be a brother in Christ. North Carolina House District 7 joins us today, and just kind of going through a wrap-up of some things that happened and moved from the House over to the Senate before the crossover date came about. So we were talking about the no vaccine mandate during the executive order or rule or papacy, if you will, of Governor Cooper. And then this one, several of these things, Matthew, are kind of a response to things that we've seen happening in the culture recently. HB 324, ensuring dignity and non-discrimination in the schools, sounds like it's a little bit of a anti-critical race theory kind of bill.
It is. I love the title of this because it's exactly what it is. What we're saying is everyone should be treated fair and equal, and we're not going to rise one race or one sex over the other. And that's what as Republicans we promote regularly. But Democrats are trying to play the game and weaponize race, you know, to try to meet an agenda. And what this does is exactly what we're saying. We just want everyone treated fair with the same dignity and rights as the Constitution gives us. The thing we've been fighting for all these years. Let's not go backwards. Let's make sure we're all treated fair and equal.
So that one affects primarily the public school system across North Carolina. Is that correct?
That's exactly what it's written for, is for the public schools. When you've got some of these public schools that are trying to change their that critical race theory, they're trying to implement that in the school system. This is what we're trying to prevent.
Good. All right. HB 805, Prevent Rioting and Civil Disorder. Obviously, you are a co-sponsor of that. And that one was a response to what we saw happening in cities across North Carolina and, in fact, the nation last year. Is that correct?
It is. It increases the penalties and also what you can what you're charged with. And what I really like about it is that, let's say Steve Noble hires Matthew Winslow to go downtown and riot, and I do that, guess what I can do? I'm also going to come after Steve Noble because he was the instigator in the rioting.
Oh,
so we're
see,
not just holding
great.
That one person. We're also holding you accountable, which,
yeah,
you know.
Well, that's important because there's paid agitators and rioters across the country.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that was – I was actually the speaker and I were going back and forth on some different things, and this is one of the things I was talking to him about. And so he's the one that wrote the bill, and I was like, yes, this is exactly what we need. Hold the people responsible that are causing the chaos, and let's quit allowing them to ruin our streets.
Excellent. Okay, HB 605, which I know is near and dear to you, the Voter Right to Know Act, you're the primary sponsor of that. That's moved quickly. Unanimously passed in the House, which obviously means it's bipartisan. And we talked about it briefly before, but help us to understand what that's all about. HB 605, Voter Right to Know Act.
It's very simple, Steve. When I was working the polls, there were a lot of people that didn't have the information they needed. They didn't quite understand, you know, all the processes. And in fact, they were misled in some cases on when I go to vote, you know, what can I do and what can I not do? Because they ask one person and they tell them one thing, they ask somebody else, they tell them something different. So what this does is it gives a QR code, a phone number, and the website on a placard before you walk in so that you can get any information that you want. So there's no question about it. It's the main drive for this is to drive integrity back into the system. And if you as a voter feel comfortable that you have all the information you need to make a wise decision when you go vote, to me, I think that's a win, and it helps drive that integrity back in the system.
Excellent. And then these next two are both about opioid, HB 93, which was require opioid antagonist education, which is really important. I'm excited for you to explain that. And then a follow-up, HB 180, which is just making August 31st as Opioid Awareness Day. This is a huge issue. Biden administration hasn't really said a peep about it. Trump administration was doing a great job of engaging this. I'm glad to see these making it out of the House. Tell us about these right quick.
Yeah, you've got some members that like myself that have seen some devastation in their family because of this, and this where doctors prescribing opioids and that comes an issue with the patient. And so what this does is now we're educating them in advance. Here's the potentials. Here's what could happen, and also educating them. You know, let's say that you've got someone elderly in the family and they need to take an opioid, but also educates them on the dangers that if someone young in the household, you know, has an overdose, what can you do? And it also gives them information on you can get a prescription for Narcan, which immediately is an opioid blocker. So if you do have a child accidentally ingest it, it will block the opioids and keep them from overdosing.
And then, of course, HB 180, Opioid Awareness Day. Is this because a few years ago I've had a number of guests on the show, Matthew, including a former Raleigh police officer who was injured on the job. And then part of his shoulder surgery and then opioids. And then that ended up, he got addicted. He wasn't looking for it. I mean, it was a devastating story. And it's something that moms and dads and husbands and wives, I did a number of shows on it. And people were just screaming for more awareness. So it's good to see this HB 180 just designates August 31st as Opioid Awareness Day. Was that kind of the point behind it?
It is. It's driving awareness. And it's like, I was listening to you on the Facebook broadcast. You're talking about the politics, and you know, that's one of the frustrating things for me. I like solving problems. Here's an issue. Yeah. Let's solve the problem. I'm a businessman. Let's move to the next one. Politics doesn't work that way. And so for me, I'm like, well, you know, there's an easy way to fix the opioid crisis, but then, you know, doctors say, we don't want you to tell us what to do. We like still being doctors. And I don't disagree, you know, but I think in having the awareness day and bringing it to awareness to households that, hey, guess what? The opioid crisis is something that affects households individually. We're not talking about street dealers and those kind of things. We're talking about the average person. I mean, Rush Limbaugh, I mean, is a good example.
That's
he
right.
got addicted to it. No one knew about it for a long time until finally he came out and said, I'm recovering from this, and helped bring light to it. And so that's what this is for.
Yeah, so super important. HB 453, when I saw this one, I was anything that's kind of advancing the pro-life cause. You and your family have been very involved and very supportive of the pro-life cause. Obviously, I have as well. HB 453, preventing abortion based on race, gender, and or Down syndrome. Down syndrome, there was a headline about 2 years ago, Matthew, in a major newspaper. I don't know if it was New York Times or whatever. It was like, hey, up in Greenland or up in Iceland, they've cut the rate of Down syndrome babies almost down to zero. That was so you're like, wow, that's great. How did they do that? And then, of course, in the second paragraph, it's because they're aborting Down syndrome babies up there like crazy. So tell us about this one, HB 453.
Again, I love the title, Human Life Non-Discrimination Act, No Eugenics. Mm. I mean, when people are making decisions based on, I don't want a girl, I don't want a boy, and I'm going to have an abortion. You know, I think they might have Down syndrome, and I want to have an abortion. It breaks my heart even talking about it, making that decision, because, I mean, the test itself is only 50% effective. So you've got parents making decisions on children based on what might be 50%, you know, correct. And besides that, those children are God's. God created those children, and he put them on this earth to take care of and love on them. And we're going to make a decision before they're even born and give them a chance because we think they may or may not have Down syndrome. That's terrible. Yeah. And so when I saw this one pop up, I thought, this is fantastic. We're moving the line in the direction. And how can anybody with a heart, a soul, or anything else say, you know, I'm not for this? I mean, it's just, you and I both know it's the evil one working. He works on the hearts and minds of men and women, and he confuses it and changes the story and everything else. But Steve, this I'm so glad to be a part of this.
Amen. Matthew, as always, thank you so much for your work down there. Thank you for helping us understand this, and we'll be watching these things and praying for it. God bless you, brother. We appreciate you.
Thank you. You guys covered a lot of things today.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Always appreciate having Matthew Winslow call in. He's a good friend, a brother in Christ, also a member of the North Carolina House, District 7. I mentioned, because we were talking about the bill that is trying to push back on basically eugenics-type abortions, and I referenced a story. I didn't remember exactly where it was. I just found it on the break. So this is in Iceland. Okay, so you see the CBS News on assignment story. And here's the title. What kind of society do you want to live in? Inside the country where Down syndrome is disappearing. Now, when you see that Down syndrome is disappearing, like, wow, did they find a cure for Down syndrome? Well, what's going on there? What's up with that? Okay. With the rise of prenatal screening tests across Europe and the United States, this was from August 2017. The number of babies born with Down syndrome has significantly decreased, but few countries have come as close to eradicating Down syndrome births as Iceland. You'll note the irony in a minute. Since prenatal screening tests were introduced in Iceland in the early 2000s, the vast majority of women, close to 100%, who received a positive test for Down syndrome, terminated their pregnancy. Oh, Down syndrome baby. You know what that means. Tell them, Don Pardo. Well, yeah, now it's you don't want a Down syndrome baby, do you? Like, do you really want a mentally, emotionally handicapped child and bring them into this world? I mean, isn't life difficult enough as it is? And so nearly 100% of those women terminate it. You want to get rid of Down syndrome people in your society? Just kill them. I know that sounds brutal and harsh, but it's just the truth. That's exactly what's going on. CBS News making it look like Iceland's doing something awesome. Yeah, they're doing something awesome, all right. Awesome for the kingdom of the devil himself. Sheesh. All right. Couple of COVID stories because COVID. Pelosi ditches the mask at White House while doubling down on House floor rules. What is she, like a COVID jihadist? What is this? A maskless House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, mingled indoors at the White House event Thursday. Like, isn't it amazing? This is news. While still enforcing coronavirus mask mandates on the House floor that amount to $500 fines. Have you heard about this? Republicans balking at Pelosi's continued House mask requirements. Hey, what about the CDC here, Nancy? Despite new guidance from the CDC, called out Democratic leader for a double standard. This is the definition of hypocrisy, Representative Mark Green from Tennessee told Fox and Friends on Friday. Last week, Green, a veteran, West Point graduate and physician, what does he know, is among the several GOP lawmakers fined $500 this week for not wearing a mask on the House floor. Subsequent violations could reach $2,500. Pelosi went maskless Thursday at the White House during an East Room celebration to sign a new COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act into law. It's just dripping with irony, isn't it? She was spotted hugging and mingling freely at the event and did not observe social distancing protocols. Oh, Nancy. A spokesperson for Pelosi noted that the official White House guidance for the event said that fully vaccinated guests would not be required to wear masks or socially distance. Non-vaccinated guests, you know who you are, were asked to wear masks and keep their distance from others. Yes, separate but equal, perhaps. White House guests were also tested for coronavirus before entering the event. The speaker was required to attest to her vaccination status and required to submit a negative test result in order to attend this event, Drew Hamill, spokesperson for Pelosi, told Fox News. The CDC issued a new guidance last week saying that masks are not necessary for fully vaccinated people in most circumstances. While the White House followed by lifting its mask requirement, the House did not. Why is that? Because power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's why. Pelosi has relaxed mask guidance so that members could take their face coverings off when they were recognized to speak on the floor. Meanwhile, there's no mask rule in the Senate. Pelosi and the Capitol attending physician, Dr. Brian Monahan, have said the House mask requirement will remain unchanged until all House members are fully vaccinated. I thought we had freedom here. Apparently not. We have a responsibility, quote, we have a responsibility to make sure that the House of Representatives chamber is not a petri dish because of the selfishness of some not to be vaccinated, Pelosi said on Thursday. But some Republicans have openly ditched their masks this week and have faced fines of $500 apiece. I would just sue them and say, I'm not going to answer the question. I don't have to answer the question. That's a HIPAA violation. Just sue them. Green, the congressman, accused Pelosi of ignoring the updated science. It's just harassment, basically, he said. You think? Then there's this Pope Fauci hanging out with Chris Cuomo of the dynamic duo, right? This was kind of funny, but really important, okay? So you got to pay attention to this stuff. Cuomo invited the president's chief medical advisor, that's what I call him, Pope Fauci, to address confusion over the Biden administration's newly relaxed CDC mask guidance, which Fauci said, quote, triggered an interpretation that we can now just throw away masks, which is obviously not the case, unquote. Fully vaccinated people would gladly follow the advice to shed their masks outside, said Cuomo, but people who have not been vaccinated will cheat. Again, you know who you are. Quote, the fix here, listen, this is serious. This is the left. The fix here is something that has been studiously avoided by the administration, Cuomo stated. You have to have a tracking mechanism. You have to have a vaccine passport. Otherwise, this will never work, Cuomo said, because there is no way to differentiate the vaccinated from the unvaccinated. Sure there is. Sure there is. Give them a little yellow star. That'll help. Why do administration officials avoid the passport? Cuomo asked incredulously. Fauci replied that, quote, if you, in fact, require a passport on a national level, you're going to be discriminating against people and putting people at a disadvantage. Wow. A sober-minded moment there for the Pope. Denying unvaccinated people access to the public would amount to essentially forcing them, in many respects, to get vaccinated, Fauci said. Why shouldn't I get opportunities as a vaccinated person that you don't get as unvaccinated, white man, Cuomo asked. See, I added that, but that is, I mean, listen to that. Preferential treatment for the vaxxed. You unvaxxed, get to the back of the line, perhaps the back of the bus. If you want to preference people who are vaccinated, you have got to give us a way to distinguish between those who are and those who aren't, Cuomo said. Again, this is CNN Cuomo Chris, okay? Why put it on everybody else? Although I'm sure his brother would agree. Why not do it centrally at the federal level? You guys have the best way to do it. You got the most data, the most manpower. Dr. Fauci responded, Chris, I don't have an answer for you. Fauci doesn't have the answer, Cuomo said in mock disbelief. Oh, this is really disturbing. A Gallup poll released earlier this month revealed how divided Americans are over the issue. We are. While a slim majority of those surveyed supported private sector decisions to require proof of vaccination for a very few activities, but only due to overwhelming support among Democrats and liberals, between 62 and 85% of Democrats welcomed a vaccine passport. Wait a minute. What about equality? Whatever happened to that? Diversity. While less than a majority of registered independents and Republicans support documentation of vaccines for any public activity. Note how they said that, while less than a majority. So that could be like 40%. That's still a high number that are good with vaccine passports. You think that's impossible in this country at this point? With eschatological considerations looming in the background? I don't think so. Quote, the use of government-mandated passports does raise legal and constitutional questions involving equal access. This is from the Gallup poll. As of the beginning of this month, seven states had already passed legislation prohibiting government agencies and or private businesses from requiring people to provide proof of vaccination before accessing services. I wish we were one of them, but we're not. All seven states, at least not generally, okay? We talked about that, a very specific one. That's what Matthew was talking about. This is talking about a blanket one across the state. The ones that did, Arizona, Florida, Idaho, Iowa, Montana, Texas, and Utah, all led by, what do they have in common, class? That's right, Republican governors. Americans consider the idea of needing a federally issued document a fearful development. Quote, we are on the verge of East Germany. Show me your papers, said Fox News primetime host Will Kane on Monday. The fight to control you, to lord over you, has just begun, Kane warned. The left is going to push the vaccine mandates and vaccine passports. Yep, that's exactly right. That's exactly where they're going. Okay, what to do next? Okay, this one, new survey shows nearly half of millennials don't know, care, or believe in God. Okay. The latest survey of the American Worldview Inventory from Arizona Christian University Cultural Research Center found 43% of millennials born between 1984 and 2002 said they don't know, don't care, or believe that God exists. Only 57% said they were Christian. Nationally, by the way, across all age categories for years, nationally, you've had somewhere between 70 and 80% of people that self-identified as Christian. Doesn't mean they are. That's just how they identify themselves. Now that's just crashing down, okay? So, by the way, George Barna, Barna Research, George Barna started Barna Research. Now he's off doing his own thing. But he's behind this worldview inventory from Arizona Christian University, the Cultural Research Center. He runs that now. And George is going to be on for the full show coming up on June 22nd. Okay, I'll let you know as we get closer. But June 22nd, a full show with George Barna. We're going to talk about the state of Christianity and the nation from a religious perspective, a spiritual inventory perspective. So we'll have George on for the entire show on June 22nd. So a little bit more from this article. Then we're going to talk about the national debt, which is only expected to approach $89 trillion by 2029. So no issue there. And then ESPN Stephen A. Smith slams Tim Tebow's return to the NFL as an example of white privilege. We'll have a little fun with that. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Ah, yeah, you think? Welcome back, it's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. And you may notice, I actually talk about this usually on Fridays. So I usually call it a snarky Friday, because by the end of 5 days of consuming this type of stuff all the time, if you were sitting where I'm sitting, you'd probably be pretty snarky as well. I'm sure you deal with it in your own life as we go through all these things. But really, again, I hope and pray that you know Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. Okay. If you do, if you're born again, then your house has been placed on a firm foundation. And so no matter what kind of crazy stuff's going on in this world, even personally, it's all temporary. Okay. Only the human soul will last forever. This planet eventually will, when heaven comes to earth. But that's the ultimate vaccination against all these things. In this world, you have trouble, but be of good cheer, Jesus said. I've overcome the world. And so do you have that hope? Because if you don't, the news of the day and what's happening in the culture and everything will just wreck you, where you'll see that you just see nothing but darkness. But if you're in Christ, you always have hope. And that's why I can come in here and do this most of the time with a really good spirit and no lack of a little bit of humor here and there, because for me personally, it helps to get through it. Okay. We're going to dive into this more in June 22nd with George Barna. 43% of millennials, those are people born between 84 and 2002, said they don't know, they don't care, or they just don't believe that God exists. 43%. Okay, that's staggering. The 2021 survey was conducted by interviewing 2,000 adults with a plus or minus 2% margin of error. The report released earlier this month underscores the declining importance of religious faith in American life, as highlighted in pandemic reopenings when politicians prioritize restaurants and tattoo parlors and strip joints, I would add, over houses of worship. Right. And so we've seen pastors and churches get in trouble. And you see it up in Canada. They arrested this guy. They've arrested a couple of pastors up in Canada because they dared to open. Man. But in a nation that's, listen, we talked about this with Steve Dace not that long ago with the Blaze. And, you know, he can be kind of a doom and gloom. He's, you know, every once in a while, I mean, we went through his whole list of 12 different things. And one of them was, hey, you just got to deal with the fact, you Christians, if you're a believer, that you live in a pagan nation. You're Daniel and you're living in Babylon. Okay, that's the deal. And what do you expect out of Babylon? Not that we don't try to affect things in the here and the now. Absolutely. Love your neighbor as yourself. We don't just sit on the sidelines and do nothing, move to Montana and be on your 20 acres or whatever and let it all burn. No, because these things that happen in our country affect people, people made in the image of God. And so you have to engage. Otherwise, you're not loving your neighbor as yourself, which is also a violation of the first major commandment when they asked Jesus that. What's the greatest command? Love your neighbor. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself, because those two things fulfill the law, by the way. You look at the Ten Commandments, verse 4, vertical, love God. Next 6, horizontal, love your neighbor. And the middle one's a little bit about time. Okay. So loving your neighbor. Well, if I'm gone, Steve, you know, I'm 55. So in 40 years, most likely I'll be with the Lord. If he gives me that long, U.S. national debt expected to approach $89 trillion in 40 years. Nope. By 2029. This was in Forbes, the beginning of May. And this is what we're doing to our posterity. Nobody talks about this. People in D.C. don't talk about this because they're all guilty. That's why they don't talk about it. The U.S. national debt is rising at a pace never seen in the history of America, with the current debt exceeding $28 trillion, an increase of nearly $5 trillion in 14 months. Washington is now debating an infrastructure bill with a price tag close to $2 trillion. Even without this additional spending, the national debt will approach $89 trillion by 2029, according to the U.S. debt clock, which I reference regularly in here. This would put the country's debt to GDP ratio at 277%. Debt to GDP, gross domestic product, how much you make versus how much debt you have. Okay, 277%. You make 100 grand a year, you have $300,000 in debt. Oops. And you keep doing that every year. Problem. Surpassing Japan's current 272% debt to GDP ratio. The good news, tongue in cheek, is that the U.S. economy grew by 6.4% the first quarter of the year. The bad news is that after we return to normal, future economic growth will not be as robust, primarily due to the burgeoning debt. Yes, America is losing, or perhaps already has lost, control of its public spending. Oh yeah, that was gone a while ago. Looking at data since 1901, this was in Forbes, federal government receipts and expenditures were mostly in line until the early 1970s. Sure, we had deficits at times, World War I, the Great Depression, World War II. Even then, Washington had some measure of control over its spending when the country was still under the gold standard. But when Nixon abandoned the gold standard in 71, the shackles were removed. Why? Because then we could just print it. Okay, when you had a gold standard, you only had as much money as you had gold. Now you get rid of the gold standard, you have what's called fiat money. You just print it. Wow. In more recent times, Washington's propensity to overspend has been unparalleled. When the financial crisis hit in late 2007, Congress passed a series of spending bills known as quantitative easing to help the country emerge from the Great Recession. Back then, expenditures were about 67% greater than receipts. The COVID-19 pandemic has brought in a new wave of spending. Now we're nearly 92% greater than receipts, higher. Okay. Simply put, we're leveraging our future to stimulate today's economy. There you go. There it is. Who cares about our posterity? We need to keep the stock market propped up. We need to keep the dollar propped up. And we need to keep our jobs here in Washington, D.C. It's a massive case of immorality, systemic immorality, especially at the D.C. level. And for states, the vast majority of states in these United States, their second or third largest source of income to the state is federal money. Did you know that? Second or third, federal money. The whole thing's completely upside down. It's a train wreck. And that's with my students every year. And I show them a couple of different videos and we talk about it. And they're like, well, Mr. Noble, what can we do? And I'm like, honestly, I don't know. We can't grow our way out of this. We can't cut the budget out of it. That's not going to work. Whoa, well, maybe we balance our budget. Okay, fine. But we're still going to be $30 trillion, $40 trillion, $50 trillion in debt. You can't pay that down. It just doesn't work. So what do you do, for example, with a company that's going under like that? You can get some bankruptcy protection while you reorganize, right? Which I think is kind of where we're at right now. But eventually, what do? It either closes down or it gets bought or it merges. That's what I think we're moving towards. And I would bring an end times theology in there, which the book of Revelation talks about 10 different kingdoms in the end, not about America, but 10 different kingdoms. So does America just merge? I think that's what we'll have to do. Hey, Canada. Hey, Mexico. Hey, a couple other people. Hey, we got a deal for you. I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. Either you help us out and we all slam together here economically, or you get nothing. Take your pick. Lord help us. Then there's this. This one was, going to be an example of critical thinking and how you kind of deal with some of these stories, okay? If you're going to deal with facts and stuff. ESPN's Stephen A. Smith slams Tim Tebow's return to the NFL as an example of white privilege. ESPN sports commentator, like I thought they were about sports there. Stephen A. Smith claimed Thursday that white privilege is the primary reason that former Heisman Trophy winner Tim Tebow has been given another opportunity to make it in the National Football League. This is from, I don't remember where I got this story. I'm going to bring up white privilege when I brought up Steve Nash getting the job in Brooklyn. Is this not an example of white privilege? Smith said on ESPN's First Take before asking. What brother do you know that's getting this opportunity? He's talking about African Americans, obviously. Now that makes people uncomfortable because we're talking about race, Smith continued. But let me be the first to say I don't give a blank how you feel. I mean what I say. It is white privilege. Tebow, an outspoken evangelical Christian and former NFL quarterback, signed a one-year deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars this week in a bid to make the team at the tight end position. Tebow's former college coach at the University of Florida, Urban Meyer, is now the head coach of the Jaguars. Maybe it's a little bit more like, of team history nepotism, as opposed to the fact that Tebow's white. Meyer had previously defended his team's decision to give Tebow a tryout earlier this month by claiming his former player was in the best shape of his life and a competitive maniac. In a statement expressing gratitude to the Jaguars for the opportunity, Tebow said, quote, I want to thank the Jaguars for the opportunity to compete and earn the chance to be part of this team. I know it'll be a challenge, but it's a challenge I embrace. I'm dedicated to taking the direction of our coaching staff and learning from my teammates. I appreciate everyone's support as I embark on the new journey, unquote. It reminds me of, remember this when Michael Jordan went into the minor leagues in baseball and they gave him a job? I mean, he was later in life, right? Wrapping up his NBA career as the greatest of all time, without a doubt, for all you LeBron fans out there. But you know why he got a job in the minor leagues? Because obviously it was white privilege. Oh, wait. The 33-year-old athlete last played in the NFL in 2015. He was drafted in 2010 by the Denver Broncos, where, you know, he had a little rush there, but then it fizzled out. During the segment on ESPN, Smith said he was happy for Tebow as a person, but argued that similar opportunities would never be given to black athletes, such as Colin Kaepernick. He also linked his reaction to the black community's reaction to George Floyd's death last year. Because, quote, this is Smith, because black people have repeatedly felt like we have the proverbial knee on our neck, he said, we constantly have to scratch and claw our way. When we see someone of a different ilk, of a different ethnicity, getting opportunities we know we would never get, that's where the words white privilege comes from. Okay, so I saw the headline and I'm like, oh, this will be good. Then I read it. And then when I got to the end of the article, I did something that I usually do with articles like this. I go to Google. And what do you think I Googled? The thing that I Googled came up with an answer of 68.7%. What do you think that is? That's the percentage of the NFL that's made up of African Americans. So if white privilege is alive and well in the NFL, then why is nearly 70% of the NFL made up of African-American players, Mr. Smith. What's up with that? Wow, well, maybe they just deserve to be there. And maybe, just maybe, Tim Tebow will deserve at least a shot. And if he doesn't perform, I can guarantee you they'll cut him, even though he's white. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.